Welcome to the Voice in the Pen podcast, recorded at Hatch Music Studios. Voice in the Pen is cultivating space for songwriters and creatives in Wilmington and surrounding areas. Find Voice in the Pen on Facebook and Instagram. Your support gives a platform for original content and helps nurture Wilmington's creative community. Thanks for listening.
This is episode 22. I'm Emily Burdett, and today we're talking with Brian Ressler about his musical theater background, songwriting, and creativity.
Welcome to the Voice in the Pen podcast, the pod and the cast. We have, my name is Delia Stanley.
And I'm Emily Burdett.
Brian, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Brian Ressler. I am super happy to be here.
Yay. Want to tell us a little bit about what you do music-wise?
Well, I am a singer-songwriter and playing a lot in the Myrtle Beach area. I'm also forced to be the entertainer. I don't necessarily want to be all the time. Well, I want to be an entertainer, but not necessarily for people eating dinner. But I am a singer-songwriter, originally from Pittsburgh, moved down to the area in 2000, live in Calabash right now, and trying to move more away from the Myrtle Beach area and more to playing in the Wilmington area, honestly.
You know, I did notice that you were in Myrtle Beach when I was lightly Facebook stalking. And I wondered about, you know, Wilmington can be a bit of a tourist town, a bit of an on-season, off-season, and Myrtle must be even more so.
It is, honestly, if Dante were alive, there would be 8 levels of hell. So
we're adding Myrtle Beach onto the Inferno.
Yes. That's not entirely true. There are pockets of, here's the thing, is there's so many talented people in Myrtle Beach, and they just all get placed in places where they can't grow and they can't thrive. And that's the real problem, is it's a town that doesn't understand how much good that it has. And every time that I play up in Wilmington, it's crowds that are responsive to originals, also to interpretations, because I don't like to do straight covers. If I'm doing a cover, I like to interpret it a little bit, make it my own. And honestly, it's also the ability to do some cover songs that I like rather than are just like, oh, here's Mustang Sally. I do not play any of those ones in Myrtle Beach, and I still seem to make it by okay. But at the same point in time, it doesn't mean that people aren't asking me for Wagon Wheel or Brown Eyed Girl.
I mentioned last podcast that I once convinced somebody that I've never heard Wagon Wheel. I don't know that song. When they requested, I'm like, I've never heard. They're like, what? You know Wagon Wheel?
It's fun to mess with your audience.
Do you slip originals in there though when you're doing these covers? Yeah.
Actually, what was cool is there's some locations that are very cool with it. Those places aren't the restaurants where tourists from out of town always are. Those are usually the bars at night. And so I do enjoy some of those shows as well, but all in all, it's the ones that are catering to out-of-towners are not catering to originality. Mm-hmm. And I get it, because the out-of-towners aren't going to be back to hear an original again and again, because they're just there for one day and they're just there to be entertained.
Have a little fun and hear like songs they know and sing along.
And I understand that, but at the same point in time, like during the off season, there should be more people who complain about the fact that the area has no culture that should be going to support the people that actually could be the culture if they were given the chance to be. There are bands in Myrtle Beach who have played big national things that are now still just playing at like Polly's Island Tavern on a Thursday night, even though they've done the third stage of Bonnaroo, you know, that sort of stuff. And it's like, the town doesn't know what they have. And there's not as many places in town that are willing to give just that aspect of their talent is shot. And it is why I do like playing up in Wilmington a bunch.
Well, I'm glad you think that of Wilmington, because I think we struggle with some of those same things, though, here.
Yeah.
And feeling a pressure to write a set list that's for...
Yes.
Whatever, for entertainment versus the need, really, to get your original stuff out there as well.
And it's always venue specific. Mm-hmm. And I feel the places where people are just looking for background noise are always going to be here's the cover. Right. We want the cover artist. The background noise is never going to be the original stuff. It is the place where, and I don't want to lump people into a category, but it's the place where the places where people go that have more of an artistic nature, the venues that have more of an artistic nature to begin with, mm-hmm. where the original stuff is more viable. Places like breweries, craft beer venues, wine bars, those tend to be more open to original music than a place where, is going to have snow crab legs, for example, on the menu.
Oh, you can eat.
Yeah. and so there's more of those venues up in Wilmington than there are in Myrtle Beach. But there's also the places that here we want music for the snow crab legs too.
Hey, and that's my bread and butter, man. So I get it. So how long have you been songwriting for?
If you include just I was writing poetry, sure. As early as fifth grade.
The cringy poetry from fifth grade. Do you still have some of it laying around?
I did until I moved down here. When I moved down here, I was in a studio apartment. And so a lot of stuff was in my parents' basement. And my parents' basement flooded in a storm. Aww. So, and not only did I lose that, but I lost... Say how old you are without saying how old you are. I lost my entire cassette collection, included some rare things, including a bootleg from 1980 of U2 in a bar campus. Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, I know. And every Cure album up until Wish I had on cassette at that point in time too, and it was
I would be devastated.
Everything by Depeche Mode up until that point in time, everything by the Smiths, and I will just put this disclaimer by the Smiths: I'm a Johnny Marr person, not a Morrissey person.
So you need to put the asterisks in.
Yes, Johnny Marr is so good; he makes unsufferable people listenable. If you notice, Modest Mouse's only popular albums were when Johnny Marr was playing guitar too.
I mean, that's fair. I hadn't thought about that.
But yeah, I lost my poetry. I lost all of that kind of stuff. And it was tough.
Sometimes I have to stop myself from wondering how many songs have been written and lost before mm-hmm. they got recorded or written down. How much art has been created and lost before it had a chance to get anywhere.
Yeah, and these days, how much art has been created and lost by people dropping their phones.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you all have just as much stuff in your notepad and your voice recorder as I do right now. So
I was just thinking about that today, actually. I was thinking, I haven't really written a lot of songs this year. And I said to myself, that's not fair. Yes, I have. But they're all on the voice recorder. And I have pieces mm-hmm. of it on my Google Drive where I try to stay organized. And I'm like, no, there's music on this phone. There's music on that voice recorder. I just have to go and get it recorded or at least write it down so that it doesn't disappear into the cloud forever.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've been trying to do lately, organize. I've got my new songs that I'm working on or half-written songs, putting them into my Google Drive. So I'm like, okay, let's keep up this habit.
Yes. The Google Drive habit. I'm trying and, it also.
And at $299 to get that 200 gigs a month as opposed to the 200 gigs at $299 a month as opposed to just the 15 gigs for free, that $3 is worth it every month.
I do it every month.
Yeah.
Absolutely worth it. And about once a year I go in and just do a big old upload of everything.
Smart.
That I haven't backed up yet. A lot of times what'll happen though is if I like something that I've written, I'll instantly put it up to Google Drive and send it to a few friends that'll tell me the truth, right, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, this part's good, this part needs work, and this is why it needs work, you know?
That's interesting. Do you have a friend circle of like creative folks that you can trust with that?
Yes, I do. Most of them have moved away, which is why I've got to put it on Google Drive and send them the link, as opposed to just, you know, saying before, kind of say, hey, I got something, come to the open mic and let me play this, you know? Right. It's usually now the Google Drive and send off. And it's weird because this, you mentioned you didn't feel like you've written that much this year. I look back, I've got, here is two verses without a refrain. Here's a refrain without any verses. Here is like seven cool licks. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard for me to just put it all together,
together. I think that when I go through the phone and the and the Google Drive where pieces and parts, right, it's going to be time to Frankenstein things together and say, wait, I have been writing. I have been.
but we're so judged on our output rather than just the creativity itself. And I think that's bad for us to judge ourselves on output, because
I was going to say, it's for me, it's self-judgment. It's like,
yes,
oh man, I'm not writing enough. I'm not taking my time to do more writing. You know, it's like, I'm not disciplined enough. I've got all this stuff. I've got all these pieces. Yes. But like, oh, it's been a year since I wrote that piece.
And, but we should be saying like, good job writing those pieces though.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Any writing is for good writing.
And it's one of those things too, that every now and again, when you just have that one song that writes itself in 15 minutes, for like the next year, you expect every song to write itself in 15 minutes.
Somebody mentioned that last podcast as well. And I love that there's this continuing theme of like the songs that come to you fully formed style. Like, that happens. That's like an experience that people have, and it fascinates me.
Interesting. And I actually, like, along those lines, like, everybody talks about the muse as being like this divine idea, and it's almost like, I really feel like the ideas are already there. The muse is just what silences everything else in your mind to let it come out.
Well, that's interesting. You do have a song kind of on the note of pursuing the muses, if you will. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, since we're on the subject of you know, writing the song about not being able to write the song?
Well, my 2015 album. Oh God,
that we just won't made talk me about feel how that was that 10 just years made, ago. Yeah. Almost. We won't talk about that.
It's called Songwriter's Lament, and the song, it's the, like the title song, is a song about being afraid that every song that you write is going to be the last song that you write. And eventually that'll be the truth. And that's kind of frightening, but at the same point in time, to just keep producing until that happens. And it's just that fear of not everybody being on the dance floor at the same time. When you've got the lyrics, but the music isn't on the dance floor. You've got the cadence, but you don't have the right words to fit the cadence. And it's just when it's like you've got all of these pieces, but the dance is just a little bit off. And that's just because it does become disheartening. But at the same time, even though you know, and you're telling yourself, I'm still creating stuff. But it's, there's some form of just esteem that comes with the cohesion that's just uplifting. And God, I love it when it happens. And it's frustrating when it doesn't. And I'm to the point now too, where if I start getting into that downward spiral, if I'm not creating or like not noticing that I'm creating anything, maybe then it's time to just jump to the cajon and just start smacking a beat and start doing a chant over that and seeing what happens. Or I am no good at the keyboard, but maybe it's time to go play the eight notes that I know how to play and try something there.
I love switching to a different instrument and see,
Or I've even done it where I've got a octave mandolin, because these hands are too big for a regular mandolin, and maybe trying something out there. And usually what happens there is like immediately I'll have a refrain. And it's like, damn, where's the rest of the verses?
Yeah, right.
But at least it's still saying, at least it's still saying that, hey, I'm still creating something.
That reminds me of a Joni Mitchell quote, which I can't remember completely, but to paraphrase, it was something like, if I'm not feeling inspired at the guitar, I'll go paint a picture. And if mm-hmm. I'm not feeling inspired to that, I'll go write a piece of poetry. And just sort of naming some different ways to get the creative juices flowing, and that it's not necessarily product driven. We were talking a little bit about social media and media literacy is something that you teach. And do you find it applying to your own self as a creator with a drive for content creation and products and this prolific amount of media that we're like now expected to produce?
I'm trying to fight it as much as possible, honestly, because there's just so many unrealistic expectations that society's putting on us in so many ways. As content creators, it's like, we've got to, if we're doing marketing, we've got to do marketing every day. If we're music, we've got to put out something new every week to every month at least. So we have these unrealistic standards, and unrealistic standards are one of the things that I do teach in my media literacy class, because we talk about the unrealistic standards of beauty, where there's that one body type that like 6% of the country has, and then they expect the other 94 to match that. Or even I teach college and I say there's an unrealistic expectation for what intelligence is, where like being well-read and that sort of stuff is considered like the standard of intelligence. And I've got friends who are just like, I'm just a simple high school graduate. And meanwhile, they're doing things with carpentry. They're doing things with serving. They're doing things with luthierism that I could never even dream about, even conceptualizing in my own mind. And they're brilliant. And society has led them to believe that they're not. And along the same lines that as content producers, if we're not creating, if we're not putting stuff out all the time, then we're not considered creating, no matter how much we're actually creating and not putting out there. And like, I fight with this all the time of just, well, do I just go on to YouTube now and just do like a weekly interpretation of a song? Mm-hmm. And, or do I, cause I don't want to be just the little dancing fool, like, give me money, give me clicks, give me views, you know, that sort of stuff. Yes. Like those old, like those old like street people with like the monkey on the string and stuff. Like, I don't want to be the monkey on the string, honestly. And
that is what it feels like. I've been trying to do more content too. And it's like, sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, like, why am I struggling so much with this? It's like, I have to, like, you start to overthink, like, what's going to hit the mark, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you're like judging yourself, like, by the views that you get. And you're like, oh, I failed on that one. And then it's like, this just this extra thing. And I don't know if that's sort of how you feel too, but it is like this expectation to.
And there's times, you know, do you just find yourself just dropping out for a while and avoiding the rat race and then jumping back in and like, I got to create, and then just dropping out. I was like, I'm not going to create for a while. I'm because
we burn ourselves out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. And that's not, it's almost like we're trying to have a relationship with hits and clicks and all of those. And we're losing our relationship with art in the process.
Yes.
And that's not going to be good, because the fact of the matter is as artists, it's even more important for us to create meaningful things. To see, just seeing that AI can create stuff that sounds catchy but is completely meaningless. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to us to add meaning to everything. So I feel, so when people have asked, is AI taking like the job away? It's like, no, it's making our job that much more important, in my opinion.
I agree with you 100% on that.
And
I mean, that's a great point, because when you look at what you're supposed to be putting out there, right? It's like, you look at TikTok and I heard someone say recently that the branding of TikTok is to do videos in such a way that it is very like very low budget. Not in other words, it doesn't really look that great.
Yeah.
Right. There's no real artistic thought behind it. It's like, it can be like the worst looking thing. And if it's funny or whatever and gets views, then it was successful. And that's fine. But like, I want to create things that have like aesthetic, like good aesthetic and like cool, like artistic feel to them. And you do that. And then, and then it's like, nobody liked it, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, but that was something that felt like, it felt so good to create, but then the other, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's not a lot of thought behind the things sometimes that get the success.
America's hooked on formulas. Mm-hmm. If you look at them, and I know I'm going to offend a lot of people by saying this, but if you look at the Marvel Universe, it's...
I'm a big comic book nerd.
And here's the thing. If you look at the books themselves, they're far less formulaic mm-hmm. than the actual movies. I mean, all of the movies are basically the hero's journey formula, right. mm-hmm. for lack of a better way to put it. And that's not saying they're not good, but it's not pushing anything further.
It's following a formula.
Yeah, it's not pushing anything forward whatsoever.
Well, it's kind of like country music.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
The formula. Mm-hmm. Follow the formula.
Yes.
You know, it's like I just saw Jason Isbell talking about pumping out the bro country guys, mm-hmm. you know, and then yep. talking about specifically how female country artists are not really in the top 10 on the charts. Yes. And it's all the bro country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, because Nashville has this button that they push and they consistently get this money from the bro country they're putting yep. out. And then the female artists aren't giving them that consistently.
Yes.
So they're like, nope, you can go over there. And then the female artists are like, okay, we're leaving. You know, yep.
A long, long time ago, I wrote a paper in college about diversity in music. And this was pre-AI stuff, really, but it was still about just like mainstream music. And I'm not like a pop music hater, like we've talked about, like what you can take from it. But it was about this idea of like forever. Since there's been kind of mainstream record companies and somebody sort of having the control between what you're hearing on the radio and what they curate sound wise, it's like you're looking at indie music,
mm-hmm.
taking the pieces that are catchy or cool, kind of repackaging it for a mainstream audience. And that's, I think, why people get like gatekeepery about, we were talking a little bit about punk rock is like,
yeah.
in some ways, yes, mainstream music is stripping what was cool about it for everybody. And I think that's why people get protective of like certain genres and stuff like that. But that happens, that's been happening forever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we just like have to accept that. But to keep that diversity flowing, like what you said, like that's what makes that indie art even so much more important.
Absolutely.
Is that there's always going to really be a need, even before there was AI stuff, and it's going to start to eat its tail in terms of what mm-hmm. it gets inspired by, and it's just regurgitating sort of the same stuff that it's been saying, and hence the need for indie artists who aren't using formulas, who are creating new sounds and creating new things, because there needs to be that pool of mm-hmm. interesting diversity in music.
Absolutely.
Period, to keep that creative machine going.
And I think there also needs to be more done in all of the music programs to keep kids more interested mm-hmm. in things that aren't just the formula, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just because... like a lot of the people that you find making more interesting music were the kids who were in jazz band now,
right?
And stuff like that. And so I feel like that sort of funding will help to at least keep things artistic, musically speaking, in the future. Hopefully, should that funding keep going and they keep on going the route of let's do this. At Coastal, it's really interesting to just see some of the different things that come out of the music program there, just because it's not super formulaic.
Yeah.
They will have like the end of the spring semester, they'll have their pop concert, they'll have their country concert, they'll have their jazz concert, they'll have like a bunch of different genre concerts that the students are doing. But at the same point in time, we've had at Coastal Carolina, we've had something called Basis at the Beach before, which was which is pretty much a bunch of different bass players coming in and just doing their thing. And that even includes like Victor Wooten has been there and stuff like that. And that's been really, really cool to see. And one of our pop jazz band from about 8-9 years ago, ended up when they got out. Well, actually, they won like the national pop jazz competition. Ended up playing at Montreux, in France, and then became a band called Oracle Blue. And they, until you know, life went on, and they started doing their own things. Were just one of those bands that was just like, I don't believe I'm watching this in Myrtle Beach.
Right,
and they were too good for Myrtle Beach, honestly. Just everybody was so good in their own individual right that it was just mind blowing. And it's funny. It's like the people that weren't really the ones that were noticed the most, I think were the best ones, not the best ones in the band, but the ones that held everything together the most and allowed everybody else to go like the bass player, McKinley,
players are always that guy who's keeping it all together while everyone else gets to be flashy.
Yeah, he held it down so tight that even the drummer would go off on different time signatures and then come back around. And yeah.
And, well, speaking of influences for especially children, I had correctly nailed your musical theater experience by listening to the cadence of your voice when you were singing. I think there's a couple of tells for theater voices, and it like goes one of two ways. It's like either very bright and projecting, or there's that what I noticed on yours, like a fall into almost like a speaking line, like, and the storytelling. Was that something that you got into originally in school?
It was one of those things that in high school, we tried so many times to do a play and we never had the funding. Wow. So we had like basically this group to the point where we even had somebody from the Pittsburgh Shakespeare Festival come in and do like a semester of improv training with us. And then he and his sub-director partner, I don't know who this person was exactly in terms of title, but they would have a focus group and we'd just talk about teenage stuff. And by January, they had written a play based on all of our conversations afterwards. And we got funding from the state, and our own school wouldn't give us matching funding to have the play ourselves.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
This play that was like designed around y'all.
Yes.
The state said yay, and the school said nay.
Yes.
Wow, what a bummer.
I know, right? So, like, I did my first solo and chorus in fifth or sixth grade. Mm. It was Day by Day from Godspell. And then just the attempts there afterwards. And then in college, I had friends who were into the community theater and I got into that and I did quite a few plays there. My favorite two roles were in Much Ado About Nothing. And as one of the sheriff's aides and just a few other little casts. But my favorite role was a musical called Pippin. I had literally five different roles. I was the flag bearer for the war scenes. During the grandmother scene, I actually, as opposed to going to the pit, I played the guitar for Just No Time at All. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the musical Pippin or not, but it's in the original Broadway version, the guy who was the great American hero was was in that as well. But got to do that, got to do something slightly probably illegal, and having a torch on the stage for a fire pot scene. No fire hazard there. But just being able to do all of those different things and see the play from all these different angles really was so cool. And of course, being part of the chorus warm-ups, the theater warm-ups and stuff like that. But the other thing that in terms of like my diction and singing, Sinatra is the other influence there, because I'm a big fan of music, even though I can't understand the words sometimes. And I never wanted to be somebody where you couldn't understand what I was saying, because a lot of times, remember the days when you'd open up the cassette or the CD liner and there'd be all the lyrics in there?
Yes, yes.
The kids are missing so much with that today.
I loved that book.
Or there'd be, right, like there would be like little other photos or like surprises. Yeah. That was a fun thing.
That was exciting. You get the CD and open up and find the little,
Yeah, especially if you weren't like, I'm not sure what that sentence is. And you're like, that's what they said. And then you can sing along perfect to it. And
there
and
was something it meant to reading the lyrics more. As you're listening and really exploring it that I think connected us a little bit deeper with the music at the time, to be like, oh, like you were really feeling what they were writing at the time. Like, yeah, definitely. When you can understand it.
And being someone who was really, it's going to sound ridiculous, but who in early days of trying to record stuff was too poor to have the extra sheets of paper in each CD to put the lyrics in, and that it was like, if people were going to understand me, they needed to understand me. So I had to be able to do the very dictative and just have the right inflection and all of that kind of stuff. And so the one person that I've listened to, well, I will also say Harry Connick Jr. does that very well as well also, but those two and musical theater really said to me, this is how to sing best for life.
Well, if that was your goal, I think that mission accomplished in terms of being very clear. And in the music that I listened to, the vocals were always very clear and mix-wise, really right on top there. So you could really understand it.
Thank you. And the two albums that I did in the most professional studio, I sat in on the mix just to make sure that the vocals were where I wanted them to be, because everybody who does the initial mixing has their own places where they come from, their own ideas of, ooh, we need more treble, and I'm like, I want more bass, you know, that sort of stuff as well too. But for me, it was mostly like, I don't want the vocals to get lost in the music. Mm-hmm. And that was always my number one. And he was good, so I didn't really have to do too much. It was usually just, could you take a little mids out of the vocals? It's feeling a little muddy there. You know, that was really the most that I had to do with that, because he was a good mixer and engineer to begin with. So I didn't really have to do too much. It was just, even though I don't like hearing my voice, it was still fun to do the process of all of that as well, too, just to see the tweaks and stuff like that.
Well, and on the note of not muddy, I noticed a lot of, like, your guitar also, it's not muddy at all. There's string, like, separation noise, you know what I mean? Yes. Like, there's a lot of room between those strings on a lot of it.
I actually, because of a finger injury, I play most of my stuff in open D, actually.
Okay.
And having that lower note, and just forces me to actually, I do scoop a bit of mids out of my guitar as well.
Scooping the mids. We were talking about a meme. Was it a meme idea that you had?
It was
talking about scooping
the mids.
It was
silly stuff, but it was funny. Scooping the mids was the punchline. But sometimes you...
And I'm not talking knocking them all out. I'm talking if everything's put to 12, I'm going to put the highs to about 12:30. I'm going to put the lows, keep the lows right at 12, and put the mids somewhere around 10:30 to 11.
What you're doing worked,
11,
especially for the guitar. And I just want to mention something else. I'm trying to remember what the name of the song was, and maybe it was Top of My Lungs.
Yes.
And on the last podcast we mentioned, she had that song that I said, oh, it's like, I loved the reverb on it. She said, oh yeah, I recorded it in my bathroom. And I said, oh, that bathroom reverb is a thing. And I think it was on Top of My Lungs. I noticed there was a lot of that kind of airy reverb, probably for the subject matter of it. And I really enjoyed that. I'm a big reverb fan. I'm kind of like, I tell mixers, like, go above a tasteful amount, like whatever you think is tasteful, and just like push it a little bit further for me.
For me, that depends on how big the room is. Yeah. I'll push it a little bit if I'm outside.
Yeah.
And it also, I hate to say this, depends on if it's a restaurant crowd or a bar crowd too, of course. But that's also just because I am... a little bit cognizant of the fact that I am naturally loud myself too mm-hmm. when I sing. Like I don't necessarily, there's some restaurants where I'm like, why do I even have this PA system behind right. me?
So. I call it brunch tone sometimes with my lead guitar player. I'm like, brunch tone time when I want him to like reel it back in. Cause you know, lead guitar, there's like that stereotype that they yep. don't like being told to turn down. It's a true stereotype. Okay. You lead guitar players out there. But all that to say, I really enjoyed a lot of the songs that we heard you play. And thank I mean, you. That I've listened to, and we can't wait to hear you play some tunes to perform for us now.
Thank you.
Surprise.
Surprise.
Surprise. I do have a guitar, so surprise.
Well, before we wrap up wordly things, do you want to tell us about some upcoming stuff that you have going on? Are you going to, since you come up and back from Myrtle, are you going to be up in the area soon?
Yeah, actually. This will probably not air until after, like this Saturday, I'm at Flytrap at the end of the Brooklyn Arts District. Yeah. I was told that the whole back deck will be a pumpkin patch, so I'm looking forward to playing in a pumpkin patch. But
by the
time this airs, that'll probably be over with. And on the 19th, I'll be at Leland Brewing as well, too. So I'm looking
those
forward to that.
Spots.
And so I have gotten myself into those spots, but I would like to get myself into a few more spots in Wilmington, because also, this is going to sound ridiculous. I used to live in Conway, real close, and then I was in Little River. Now I'm in Calabash, and the further north I move, the more north I want to move, mm-hmm. for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, I didn't know you were in Calabash. You yes. said that, and mm-hmm. I thought you were in Myrtle, yeah. I guess. But
And it's a bit of a drive to get to the places, but like also sure. Sunday I'm at Oyster Rock in Calabash, and that's super nice to be able to just drive an hour and a half, or not a mile and a half, not an hour and a half, a mile and a half to where you're playing. And
we can share your shows too, like even if this will air out after them probably, but you know, we'll share them on our Instagram.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, and I do know that I'm once every other month at Flytrap. I'm trying to get about the same at Leland, but I think that's going to be once every 3 months because they've got a mm-hmm. good rotation. Like I think they try to do it once a season or so. And what I need to do is I need to take a day and just grab my electronic press kit, but my paper press kit with the little QR code that goes to the electronic press kit and just meander about Wilmington and mm-hmm. and figure out the good places that would
Well, in lieu of seeing you out and about in Wilmington, where can we find you online?
Online, my Instagram is at Brian Wrestler Music. I think there might be some underscores in there, but if you type in Brian Wrestler in Instagram, it's going to be the one that has music afterwards. Same thing in Facebook. I used to be on Twitter, but then Twitter became X and I disappeared from that. TikTok, I'm off that now.
And your music is on Spotify?
Spotify, Apple Music,
and, okay.
All the places where we get 7/100ths of a penny for a stream. And
that's right.
all of
so
those
start listening because we need that.
But you can also find me on Bandcamp. And awesome. We're back to the
still
season for for First Fridays where the artists get 100% of the money and Bandcamp just the rest of the month takes their, 10 to 15%. But on that first Friday, all of the money goes to the artists. So if you do still like to download things, that's me. then, and if you all have, if you all have some Bandcamp stuff, send it to me because I do. I don't want to call myself an MP3 collector, but I'm still an MP3 collector. So, because the fact of the matter is there's going to come a day when, just look at some of the things that happen with natural disasters. There's no internet. They don't have access to those sorts of things. And music is a great uplifter. And mm-hmm. to not have music during the time of a disaster seems ponderous to me, for lack of a better way to put it. So I will always be somebody who has at least access to music on my drives if I
somehow.
And also the fact of the matter is buying an album from an artist on Bandcamp means that I get to give them the same amount of money in one transaction that it would literally take me like 2,000 listens
right.
to give them that amount of money mm-hmm. on Spotify or Apple Music or anything else. So I really feel like I support the musicians that I like better on Bandcamp and stuff like that as well, too. So
support local music.
Yes.
Buy our stuff. Brian, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Absolutely.
And we're going to get a guitar in your hands.
Alrighty.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, this first song is called Like Icarus. And during the part of the pandemic where we were in lockdown, which I was in South Carolina at the time, so for that 20 minutes, yes, I'm making a South Carolina lockdown joke there, but during like the month that we were in lockdown, I wrote a bunch of songs that all had somewhat, I don't want to say mental health implications to them, but this one was really the feeling of working hard and going absolutely nowhere in the process. And it just kind of felt while we were stuck in lockdown, like that's what we were all doing, which is working hard and going absolutely nowhere in the process. So this song's called Like Icarus. How it fits, it was hemmed too high, too close to the hips. It needed a belt or else would fall onto the floor. So I jumped on a coaster to go for a ride, and I screamed till I laughed, and I laughed till I cried. But when it was over, it just left me off where I was before. Some days it feels like I'm not going anywhere. Some days it feels like I'm already there. Some wings and attempted to fly. I crashed through the clouds and I circled the sky. But just like Icarus, I made it too close to the sun. Three fingers point back when one points to blame, and change is the only thing that's the same. When all's done and said, and everything is said and done. Some days it feels like I'm not going anywhere. Some days it feels like I'm already there. Some days it feels like I'm not going anywhere. Some days it feels like I'm already there. I'm already there. I'm already there. It feels like I'm not going anywhere. Some days it feels like I'm already there. Some days it feels like I'm not going anywhere. Some days it feels like I'm already there. I'm already. So this song is called Welcome to the Neon Church, and it's about a bar in my college town that pretty much Well, we had a bunch of bars in my college town, and each one of them kind of had their own little niche and their own little crowd. But this one was kind of the place where everybody came after 12:30 in the morning, no matter what niche or crowd you were from. It was townies. It was just, it was people in Greek. It was athletes. It was it just people just came there. And no matter who you were, you felt welcome. It had a little window and all of the neon beer signs that you could ever imagine in this little window. And it was also the place I played a bunch of Wednesday nights when they didn't even need me to play. They had Dollar, Captain, and Cokes those nights. It was the late 90s. So late 90 pricing here, of course, too. But they didn't even need me to play. They just liked me to play there. And it was just one of those places. I went back to my college town, went up to Pittsburgh this May for my brother's birthday. And one of those days we went back up. And even though the owner wasn't there, I messaged him, said, hi, we're going to be in town. And even though he wasn't there, he left a note for his bar staff to give us a couple free drinks while we were there. Like, it's that kind of place. Like, 20 years after I graduated and stuff. So it really is that kind of place. So this, a lot of the characters have been combined to either protect or expose the innocent and guilty. So this song's called Welcome to the Neon Church. Light in the window, it said, welcome to the neon church. I've had it better, but I guess I've had it worse. So I bellied up, I was ready to imbibe. Take my communion with the worshipers inside. See, all I wanted was to forget about the past. Just for a moment, though I knew it wouldn't last. Spirit in front of me, I took the whole thing down. Liquid amnesia till the morning came around. And I cried inside but shed no tear the moment that it became clear. So damn hard to survive. And deep inside I have to think there must be more than just this drink that's keeping us alive. The man sitting next to me, he wore a dozen different masks. Curiosity gripped me, but I didn't dare to ask. Each one of them revealed who he really was. A different apostle, depending on his buzz. And there's a man who preaches by the door, looks like he found out long before. It's so damn hard to survive. And deep inside I have to think, there must be more than just this drink. It's keeping us alive. Short skirt and makeup, or a sports coat and cologne. The Sunday best of those afraid to sleep alone. Dressed to the hilt, and looking for the one that's right. Maybe forever, but probably just tonight. And there's a couple in a worn-out booth. Looks like they figured out the truth. It's so damn hard to survive. And deep inside I have to think, there must be more than just this drink. It's keeping us alive. Break of dawn, last night's a dream. The sunrise slowly starts to scream. It's so damn hard to survive. And deep inside I have to think, there must be more than just this drink. It's keeping us alive. It's keeping us alive. It's keeping us alive. The light in the window, it says, welcome to the neon church.
I've had it better, but I guess I've had it worse.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Voice in the Pen podcast, recorded at Hatch Music Studios. You can find our other episodes on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and keep up with our event schedule on social media. Until next time, stay inspired and keep writing.